If you've been told to pull up your socks, then make sure it's a pair of TNT socks. The TNT shop is now open at tntradio.live. Interviews, news, and views. You're listening to State of the Nation with Timothy Shea and Brian McClain on today's News Talk, TNT.
All right. Hour two, State of the Nation. Here we go. I'm Brian McClain out of Central Texas. I'm here with Timothy Shea out of Central New York. Timothy, time flies when we're having fun per usual, but I've got to jump in and point out a little shout out here once again to Judicial Watch. This group, you know, boy, they really go. Tom Fitton was one of my other favorite speakers when we were at Freedom Fest last year. So big shout out to them. Conservative watchdog group Judicial Watch released a voicemail recording of an FBI special agent and a Secret Service agent coordinating the raid on Mar-a-Lago. Isn't that interesting? So Tom Fitton has released some quotes to that on his X account. The recording was uncovered in an October 2022 FOIA lawsuit against the Department of Homeland Security for all communications of the U.S. Secret Service internally and with the Federal Bureau of Investigation regarding the raid on President Trump's home, and for any video or audio recordings made during the raid back on August 8th of 22. This recording, this is a quote from Tom, "This recording is real-time evidence of the Biden administration's whole government operation to abuse Trump by raiding his home. Judicial Watch will continue to piece together the details of the conspiracy to launch an unprecedented and malicious raid on the home of Biden's chief political opponent." So, Timothy, that may turn into something. I was pleased to see that come out today.
It may, of course. If nothing else, it's great that people are seeing the absolute corruption of both our Department of Justice and our FBI. And Brian, you mentioned Freedom Fest. We literally dodged a bullet there in Memphis. It was reported today, the final statistics, crime statistics out of Memphis for 2023. Murders up 50%. There were 150% as many murders in Memphis in 2023 as in 2022. So I guess we were lucky to get out with our lives.
Yeah. Well, I don't go to any American city, especially any blue American cities, and expect to get out unscathed anymore. It's just the way of our country, unfortunately. One more for you here, Timothy. Jim Hoft says, "Here we go. House Democrats on Wednesday night voted unanimously to give illegal aliens, including Joe Biden's 11 million illegal border crossers, representation in Congress and in the Electoral College." How, you might ask? Well, Democrats continue to put Americans and American workers in line behind alien invaders. The House vote was 206 to 202 with 22 representatives, 11 Democrats and 11 Republicans abstaining from the vote. So, yeah, this is to do with H.R. 7109. Language in H.R. 7109 is as follows. To require citizenship question on the census, to require reporting on certain census statistics, and to modify apportionment of representatives to be based on United States citizens instead of all individuals. So there you go with that globalese, that legalese, just trying to do chicanery on us once again.
Well, and here's the real chicanery there, okay? If it had been a straight party vote, it would have not passed. But Mike Johnson colluded with the Democrats to get 11 Democrats to vote present and 11 Republicans. That lowered the total number of votes, and that allowed the measure to carry. It's just absolute, it's a violation of his oath of office. Mike Johnson needs to go.
More Republic cuckery. Yeah, we're tired of it. Hey, if you love a good documentary, you'll love our special screenings. Uninterrupted Cinema features some of the latest or notable documentaries from the world's best filmmakers. Check out TNT's website for more information. Weekends are better when you spend it with us on today's News Talk, TNT.
Getting straight to the facts.
Enough with the lies. We need facts.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
As we approach the 2024 election, the nation is reeling after the last 4 years of madness. Timothy and I are doing our best to get a barometer on as many segments of the population as we can to get their take on what's important for everyone in the 2024 election. Joining us now is the author of the national bestseller, Living in the Days of Deception, that's days with a Z, and the senior and founding pastor of the 10,000-member Calvary Chapel, Chino Hills, in Southern California, Jack Hibbs. Jack, welcome. It's great to see you. So the left-wing media would have us thinking abortion is a top topic. The right would say the open borders and the culture warfare is a top topic. Both might agree, both sides might agree, but drawn down starkly different takes on topics like this. So what's important to you and the people in your congregation?
Well, the remarkable thing is that there's so many targets that you could point out. So what's very valuable to us as a church, we are a large church, as you mentioned, a church that is very active in local and state politics. I know that comes to a surprise to many people, but the number one thing right now for those who are of a Judeo-Christian worldview, there's no doubt, and it's never changed, and that is the abortion issue. But right behind it is just public safety. Being here in Southern California, I'm not far from places like Newport Beach, for example, where we are literally watching. It just happened last weekend, where boats are arriving with illegals jumping out in front of $7-10 million homes. Public safety is a great concern. And Southern California still kind of has that laid back kind of feel, but you can feel that something is going on to where the laws are not being upheld. And we're starting to see, and maybe I want to ask you guys, we're beginning to wonder if we actually have a working constitution anymore. Where is it being upheld? Where is it being implemented? It seems to be that we live in a time where things are at least confusing. What could be dangerous than that is maybe planned. So the book, Living in the Days of Deception, ever since COVID, in fact, the book came out of the COVID era where we didn't know if up was up and down was down. We were being told to listen to the experts. And then quickly, as you guys well know, the experts began to devour one another. And so I wrote the book, and it's been, you know, successful. But I think more than that is people are wondering, gosh, I feel like I'm in a daze. What's going on with my kids? What's going on with gender? What's going on with life? What's going on with faith, for that matter? And so, I think there's a lot of confusion going around, and current government affairs are not happening. It's just not helping at all.
Yeah, last hour, Dr. Jerome Corsi said since November 22nd, 1963, we've been living in a Truman Show America. And I think if people aren't in a daze, they at least feel as though they've inadvertently walked onto the set of Idiocracy, because that's really where we are. I'm expecting any day now to see ads for Brondo, because Brondo has what plants crave. We had Kate Monroe on last week, and she reiterated what you just said. She's not only are boats coming up onto the beaches and illegals getting out and running up the hill and getting into black SUVs that have already been pre-positioned there, but she said down behind those $7-10 million homes, there are people encamped in tents, homeless people living in tents right there on the beaches. And you're exactly correct. Where in America is the Constitution being upheld? I got nothing.
Yeah, in fact, listen, having a Christian biblical background, it's remarkable. Even if you don't know the Bible, check this out. The Bible says in the last days, men will become more lawless. Is that happening? The Bible says that in the last days, people will have no feeling or regard for one another to the point that they'll have no problem killing one another. People now view life through the lens of their iPhone or whatever their device is as though it's a game. We've got people that have just thrown off the confines that made this nation great. There was once a rule of law. Thomas Jefferson said it really good. I'm paraphrasing it, but I'm pretty close. He said, when we have a Judeo-Christian worldview value as a culture, we will notice that there'll be very little laws because man will govern himself in regard to his relationship with God. But when God is absent from the mind of man, we're going to need a lot of laws to keep that same level of stability to the culture. Well, my goodness, look around right now. We've got more laws than we've ever had, and we've got more lawlessness taking place, and it's exactly what the Bible says about that stuff. It's absolutely spectacular.
Yeah, and they want to write more laws. That's the thing that blows me away. It's like,
and you're going to pay for it.
Yeah, we're sitting here watching pregnant women get kicked in the stomach and the baby die. I know it's not funny, but it happened out here in Austin, and we have a Soros DA. Just lets the guy go, no problem. But he'll put all of his energy into putting a cop in jail for, you know, something that a cop would have never gone to jail for even 5-10 years ago. And to your question about the constitutionality, it's gone. We don't have it anymore. It's a faux constitution world that we live in here. It's not even a faux republic. It's a faux democracy. far gone.
You are so right. When was the last time you heard a Democrat, for example, say the words constitutional republic? In fact, for that matter, I haven't heard many Republicans say it either these days. But that's who we are. That's what we are. But it's John Adams that said that this government that we've given to the people works for a moral and a religious people, and it is wholly inadequate for the governance of any other. So when we lose our internal rudder, the way this government is structured, where we were to live under self-rule, well, now we are so, as a culture, divorced from that, that we've got kids suing parents. We've got schools withholding a child's decision-making regarding whatever from parents. We've got things that are taking place that we never would have thought of 10 years ago. Well,
not only do we have children suing parents, we have children suing parents for not having aborted them. There was literally a lawsuit. A young woman sued her parents, her mother, for not aborting her. That's how much she hated her life. Now, okay. I'm a traditional Roman Catholic. We have some differences, you and I, theologically, but there's one thing we can absolutely agree on. This is a spiritual war we are fighting.
Yeah.
And it's just taking place here in the physical realm.
It's so well said. 100% true. Absolutely remarkable. So listen, again, Bible. The Bible says there's going to be a day when men will call good evil and evil good. I think we're living in it. It's actually happening.
Yeah, we are there. And, you know, as a Californian, you know, I'm a California refugee living in Texas. I'm a recovering Californian here. But you're in the middle of it. You're in the thick of it. You experienced COVID in California. I shouldn't say experienced COVID. You experienced the government pressure in the name of COVID in California to it's like something I've never seen. I mean, I don't know if I would have made it. Honestly, if I would have been a young person in California when that happened, because when I was young in California, I was skateboarding that state. I was skateboarding from city to city to city, doing whatever I wanted. When I saw them pour sand in the skate parks and cut the ropes on the volleyball courses, I said, God bless Texas. This place is awesome. Even though here it was pretty terrible too.
Well, I got to tell you, you hit the nail on the head. And if there's any state to ride around in your skateboard or bicycle, it's this state. Listen, let's be honest. California, I've been to all the states. California, it has the most stunning diversity of its geology, of its terrain. It's absolutely gorgeous. As I speak to you right now, it's about 78 degrees outside and there's still snow on the mountains. And yet we were at the beach just the other day. No other place like it on earth. Having said that, Gavin Newsom systematically began to attack the very people who pay his way. And during the COVID era, when he would not even, listen, I actually reached out to him by a 15-minute long video asking him, you have declared marijuana dispensaries and strip clubs and bars to be essential, but you have said these businesses are not essential, thus they must shut down. Where's the church? Just tell us, Governor, where do you put the church? He refused to answer. So what I did was I went against the governor's decree. We opened up the church. And that's when, at that time, when I opened up, we had 10, 12, 15,000 adults coming every weekend. You guys, people were crying. People were free. Nobody had a mask on. and nobody died. I was getting Wall Street Journal to the New York Times. I was being told that I'm the pastor that's going to kill their congregants. And we flourished. We wound up baptizing over 3,000 people in three Saturdays because people were looking for hope. And this governor is now famously the most restrictive and fought against the very, very businesses and the people. Listen, we submitted to him our help. We said, listen, historically, around the world, when crises came, the church stood up and helped the governmental powers that were in authority. Let us help. He refused to answer. So listen, we opened up our doors. I told the pastors on staff, if I get arrested, step out there, keep preaching. If he gets arrested, next guy in line. We were ready. And I got to tell you, I got letters from the state every other week from the governor's office saying shut down. Listen to this. The mayor's office of our local city and the county board of supervisors said, you send those letters to us. Keep doing what you're doing. We've got your back. And it's just changed everything. I'm telling you, people realize, you know what? My freedom is worth even me catching a cold, maybe the flu, maybe even dying. For crying out loud, years ago, people would fight for freedom, sign up to fight. And now we walk around tiptoeing like we're going to drop dead because we might catch the flu. We have got to strengthen the spine of this nation if there's any hope. I know there's hope. Jesus died on the cross for my sins, rose again from the dead. He's God. He's real. He's coming back. That's awesome. That's settled. But what about the here and now, right now? Los Angeles needs hope. Austin, you just mentioned Austin. Austin needs hope. And I'm not saying that Christians need to go out there and hand out tracts. Christians need to shut up and do the right thing, and that is love on people. Get out there. Take care of people that are hurting. Listen, when Larry Elder was running against Gavin Newsom in this state, in the Great Recall, and when I say Great Recall, no governor was recalled in a greater number, over 2.2 million signatures to recall Newsom. How he's in office still, only God knows. But I got to tell you, Larry Elder came to me and he said, listen, if I become governor, I'm going to lean on you to lean on the churches to deal with the homeless situation because people need to be loved on instead of dealt with. And letting them set up camp on the freeway overpass is not love. They need to be taught a job and they need to get back into culture.
Yeah. Thank you for that, Jack. Yeah, absolutely. And thank you for everything you do. God bless you fighting that fight during COVID and joining us today. We really appreciate you. And we'd love to have you back on again. Living in the Days of Deception is the book you want to pick up. Jack, you want to give a website out or anything?
They can just go to Amazon.com. It's right there.
All right. Amazon and good booksellers. Jack Hibbs, thank you so much for joining us. We'll look forward to having you back on State of the Nation here at TNT.
TNT's Alex Zaharoff-Royt.
The longer it takes for a company to do disaster recovery and get back to business, the longer it takes for their customers to be back in contact with, you know, the products and services they're using from the businesses that you're protecting. So, I mean, it's sort of a domino effect. It's not just the company, but all of that company's customers. And these days in the modern era, I mean, as they say for the young people, instant gratification isn't instant enough. I mean, we want disaster recovery to happen in minutes, if not hours, like at the most. And in the past, it could have taken days.
Yeah, well, absolutely. And in fact, where I'm coming to you from Western Canada, our biggest pharmacy chain here had a ransomware attack 4 or 5 days ago, and their stores have literally been closed now for going on day six, where nobody's able to get prescriptions. Like, can you imagine not being able to fill your prescriptions because of a cyber attack? I mean, it's devastating, not just to the business and the people who are financially impacted there, but just to our community in general.
Talking Tech with Alex Zaharoff-Royt on today's News Talk, TNT. A better business tip from TNT Radio. News Talk Radio listeners are some of the most active and involved listeners of any format. TNT Radio listeners rely on TNT Radio often as their primary source of information. They trust TNT Radio and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live.
Internet. A stream online.
TNTRadio.live. Today's News Talk Radio. TNT.
People worldwide are finally waking up to the reality that the globalists at the World Economic Forum, the United Nations, and the World Health Organization do not have our best interests at heart. Case in point, the WHO's pandemic treaties. Here with her analysis and commentary on what this all means is Australian civil rights attorney Katie Ashby Hopkins. Katie, welcome to State of the Nation.
Thank you so much, Tim and Brian. It's so lovely to be with you both. It's nice to be here. It's nice to be with your listeners.
So this WHO pandemic series of treaties, because there's different treaties with different countries, give us an update. What does all of this mean for humanity?
Well, goodness gracious, what it means for humanity is that whatever happened in the last 4 years is going to be pretty tame in comparison. So currently the WHO has been busy drafting two pandemic treaty reforms. And there's one which is an amendment to the international health regulations, significant changes. The international health regulations is how we operated under the pandemic, the last pandemic for COVID. But now, apparently having learnt lessons despite having undertaken any review, the WHO has now produced two documents which are still in draft, which all our countries are due to vote on next week in Geneva, that will absolutely change the face and shape of pandemics for, you know, going forward. But it's not going to be just pandemics, it's really any potential health emergency, so could very likely extend to environment.
Yeah, that's been one of the big concerns, and one of the concerns, quite frankly, that many of us have had since 2020, when they said, hey, we're going to shut everything down. You're not going to go to a birth. You're not going to go to a funeral. You're not going to go see your grandparents as, you know, they move on. All these things. You're not going to have your business anymore. It's like, what? What do you mean? And this... You know, it made us think, many of us, well, they're doing this. This isn't like an analog to the climate hysteria. So what's to stop these creatures from saying, hey, too many tornadoes this year, gang. Everybody needs to shelter in place and close your businesses down.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, you know, the potential of where things are going. Under the pandemic agreement, for example, there is this concept of One Health. One Health is the conglomerate of environment and humans and animals. And so we've got this idea where there's this desire to control and manage everything to do with the world as we know it, and apparently all for our benefit. Lockdowns will be more significant, more severe. The ability to require isolation and quarantine is being beefed up in these documents. But what's sitting behind it all is this massive big, you know, industrial complex, which is designed at getting all of the medications into all of the humans, as many as possible, and as quickly as possible. And under the definition of what the WHO defines as a health emergency. So, you know, they've got the whole thing tied up in a nice little bow. We can define what the pandemic is or the health emergency. We can then tell you what the cure is and what you have to do. And then, oh, goodness gracious, this is also going to cost you an awful lot of money.
And unlike those illegal mask mandates and 15-day lockdowns to flatten the curve, this agreement has enforcement provisions in it, doesn't it?
Yeah, and look, it does. And you can't get past the fact that there's also unseen geopolitical enforcement provisions and the like. So yeah, there's the requirement to have an organisation within your country that ensures that you are implementing the health measures and the requirements of both the pandemic treaty and the international health regulations. And then if you're not complying it, you then have to turn around and tell them why and when you're going to fix your failure to comply. So it is... You know, it is a Big Brother scenario, and I don't think Big Brother has his best interests at heart for all of us.
And this idea of leapfrogging sovereign nations' laws and constitutions and, you know, various versions of other countries' constitutions. I mean, for us here in the United States, particularly for conservatives and traditionalists, the Constitution is sacred, you know, and it talks about, I mean, our freedoms and liberties are laid out in it. We already live in a weaponized government where they're trying to circumvent the Constitution to make new laws, which they're not going to uphold. And if they are, they're going to weaponize against their political enemies. So to think that a globalist Chinese associated institution like the WHO could author something that so many countries might sign and essentially give away their sovereignty is almost too much for a lot of, you know, normies to comprehend.
Mm, yeah. And look, it is. It's quite incredible. You've got this unelected group of people that have self-appointed themselves effectively that are going to be able to dictate to us what and our countries as to what our countries are required to do in certain situations. You know, there's up in arms when you talk about, you know, the loss of sovereignty, but, you know, a country losing its ability to make decisions for itself is a loss of sovereignty.
It absolutely is. And we've got a quick headline, Katie. We're going to get back to that point because it's a significant one. The loss of sovereignty for signatory countries to this agreement. You're listening to State of the Nation right here on today's News Talk, TNT.
I have some even more exciting news.
TNT Radio News.
For TNT, this is James O'Neill. Senator Tom Cotton has called for the impeachment of President Joe Biden, citing Biden's decision to withhold ammunition from Israel as a politically motivated action, similar to the grounds for former President Donald Trump's impeachment over withholding military aid to Ukraine. The Israeli watchdog group NGO Monitor has reported significant involvement of the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, a U.S.-designated terrorist organization, in campus protests across the United States.
Are you enjoying listening to TNT Radio?
Do you think we're doing a good job?
Then please let us know. Why not leave us a like or a positive review or comment on Facebook, Gab, or Getter? Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Katie, you mentioned signatories losing their national sovereignty. What they've been doing here in the United States is playing games with words, which they are expert at. Our Constitution requires treaties to be passed with the advice and consent of our Senate, with two-thirds of senators concurring to ratify the treaty. Well, they're getting around that constitutional requirement by calling this an agreement or an instrument, or they use all of these other words. You know, if it walks like a duck, talks like a duck, and swims like a duck, we can pretty much guarantee that it's a duck. This is absolutely a treaty legally, isn't it?
Oh, without a doubt. You can call it whatever you like, but in all essence, it is a treaty. It's an international treaty, as are the international health regulations, irrelevant of the name. You can't, you know, semantic manipulation isn't going to make a difference. It's a treaty, an international treaty, and it needs to go through its proper and full processes, including ratification.
Yeah, and we know that's may not happen. And it seems like here's another thing that, you know, we've been tracking this for since we heard about it. We have an independent journalist, Mark Anderson, join us sometimes, and he was sitting in one of the last Zoom calls that the WHO had that is available for journalists. And of course, they didn't call on him to take any of his questions. I don't know what that means, but he's someone that really understands a term that he's labeled globalese. You know, we all know what legalese is. Globalese is pretty much what Timothy is talking about right there. We just change words and this and that. But he's looked at the wording in this, you know, the proposal, right? Because it's in proposal state right now. They're trying to cram it through, vote it in. And he noticed in that last meeting that they had that all of a sudden they started adding in a lot of the red flag words that were missing up until then. So right before they start getting ready for these next couple rounds of votes, all of a sudden you start seeing wording inside there like vaccines for everybody, lockdowns maybe, all the things, the, you know, trigger words that were not there leading up to last month are now there.
Yeah, they sure are. And look, if you just put it into perspective, who works at the WHO or for the WHO? You know, the biggest and the one I'm always I think of and and is it totally on par with what you were just saying, Brian, is COVID's taught us that no one's safe until everyone's safe. And you're like, what the hell does that mean? But it's a great little catchphrase that those drafting these agreements take and think, oh, I'm now empowered to do all of these things that I actually have no idea about the consequences of. And, you know, I've been employed by my mates and that's how I've got this gig, or, you know, I had to meet some sort of equity inclusion because I'm in a minority. We don't have experts drafting these documents anymore. We don't have experts working at these organizations. We've either got paid people that are receiving an awful lot of money to make sure that the public-private interests are facilitated in a way that will achieve the greatest result for those private interests. And then we've got a whole lot of public servants or people that have come from public health that probably have their best interests in mind, but don't know how to achieve it because, you know, they've been doing this all their life and actually have no real-world experiences.
And not everyone in these organizations is, you know, evil and nefarious. We were talking earlier about how you couldn't make up more ridiculous leaders of the globalist movement than Klaus Schwab and Ursula von der Leyen. I mean, it's like we're watching a James Bond movie here, or we're even worse, a Mike Myers spoof of a James Bond movie. But you've got a lot of good people that worked with the UN and worked with the WHO, and you've got a fantastic press conference coming on Saturday that people can go to alignedcouncilofaustralia.com.au and they can join that press conference. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what it's going to be all about?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, who better than to get us to unpack and understand these pandemic treaties a little bit more, but actual people that have worked for the United Nations and the World Health Organization. So joining us at a press conference, 2 p.m. Australian Eastern Time, which can be streamed live to your doorstep, we have Dr. David Bell, former medical officer and scientist at the World Health Organization. You would have seen a lot of his writings around these pandemic treaties. One of the only WHO people that is speaking out about these. His rap sheet is longer than my arm. We're fortunately able to be joined by none other than Professor Ramesh Thakur. He has been the Assistant Secretary General of the United Nations. We're going to be able to ask them some really decent, nutty questions that people have really probably need to know the answers to. The Aligned Council is all around informing the public, educating the politicians, and making these WHO pandemic treaty reforms an election issue. So supporting these guys, we also have health and legal on the press conference panel, and it's a chance for press to join us. It's a chance for the public to join us because we might as well all be in together. And it's really a chance to hear what these guys have to say, which is pretty authoritarian and pretty damn important.
Very important. It's a great list of speakers. Professor Ian Brighthope also there, Professor Augusto Zimmerman, and further speakers still being confirmed at this point. So I wish we were in Australia so that we could attend. It would be absolutely amazing to be there and be able to ask questions. Will people that view it remotely have an opportunity? Can I raise my hand if I'm a remote viewing?
Yeah, so you can stream, and what we'll do is we'll give you one of the numbers that will be able to receive questions by probably text message or signal message might be the easiest. Yeah, we'll welcome all messages, and we encourage everybody to join because this really is a chance for you to ask the guys in the know, you know, questions you want answers to.
Yeah. Absolutely. And what else? I like to, anyone who's a subject matter expert on this, I always like to ask them, what can we do? What can everybody do? Obviously, we can attend. We can watch that remotely. We can ask questions. But just, you know, on a general level, like, what do you recommend humanity does to face this? You know, because this seems like something a lot of people might say, well, I have no control over that. But I don't think this is a situation where we should be saying that to ourselves.
Yeah, look, absolutely not. I think the first and foremost is the ability to talk about these things because people generally have no idea. Their first answer is, why haven't I heard about that? Well, you probably haven't heard about it because they don't want you to know about it, and they're going to censor anyone that's talking about it pretty damn hard. So talk about it. They can't censor a conversation with you and the salesperson. The reason why we've got a focus on the WHO pandemic treaty reforms is because it's in black and white. It's a clear roadmap. It avoids any, you know, accusations about being a conspiracy theorist or the like, because it's there in black and white. You can read it for yourself and you can see whether or not if you're concerned about it. That's what is a real soft introduction, I would call, to the wobbly middle, or to those that feel that something's not quite right, can't put their finger on it, want to know what's going on. But, you know, at the end of the day, they can't sense a discussion. And that's really where I encourage everyone to start first and foremost, and, you know, get informed. The Aligned Council, we've kept the information simple. We love sharing all of our council member groups' information that they're doing fabulous work for. And, you know, it's a case of getting informed and talking about it. Talk to five people this weekend and see what they know about it. You know, ask them if they'd be concerned if more pandemic treaty documents are being drafted that make the last 4 years look like a playground event. So, you know, it's a really good intro, because I think a lot of people would be interested to know, and let them make up their own mind.
Absolutely. Then instruct them to tell 5 or 10 of their friends and have it grow exponentially. Katie, can't thank you enough, not only for coming on the show, but for all the great work you're doing there at the Aligned Council, not only for Australians, but for really all nations and citizens of all nations. Again, that press conference is going to be streamed live at alignedcouncilofaustralia.com.au, and it's going to be Saturday at 2 p.m. Eastern Australian time.
Bang on.
So make sure you tune in. It's going to be important. Katie, thanks again so much.
Thanks, Tim. Thanks, Brian. Thanks, listeners, and have a lovely day.
You're watching State of the Nation right here on Today's News Talk, TNT.
I was such a young age. Everything changed. My name is Chloe. When I was 13, my dad was diagnosed with cancer. When I found out, I just didn't know how to react. I felt like everything was just kind of closing in on me. It just became a routine, dad's doing chemo. I'd come home from school, wait for mum to finish work, and we'd go straight to the hospital, spend a few hours there, just draw. It was hard to navigate going to school, hundreds of kids, and I was the only one with a dying dad. He was diagnosed in March, and then he died in October. Towards the end, I heard about canteen. It kind of felt nice to know that they had other people like me. They understood what I was going through, and we didn't even have to chat about cancer. In 2020, I became a youth ambassador, so I can help others the way they helped me. I've done so many things since I was 13. I've graduated high school, university, gotten my license, made a move across the country. Life now is just a whole lot more fun. Please give a gift today to support more young people like me experiencing cancer.
Food isn't just fuel to live, it's fuel to grow. My family relied on public assistance to help provide meals for us. These meals fueled my involvement in theater and the arts as a child, which fostered my love for acting. The Feeding America network of food banks helps millions of people put food on the table. When people are fed, futures are nourished. Join the movement to end hunger, and together we can open endless possibilities for people to thrive. Visit feedingamerica.org/act now.
Critically analyzing national affairs.
This is State of the Nation
with Timothy Shea and Brian McClain on Today's News Talk.
TNT.
Dan Franzese is a candidate for Florida's District 22, Donald Trump's home district, if you're paying attention. He's running against Lois Frankel. That's Palm Beach County. Dan has run against Lois before and did really well. And Dan, by the way, is also a signer of the Redeclaration of Independence. You may have heard him speaking with Barry Hinckley. You may have heard us speaking with Barry Hinckley. So check out the Redeclaration of Independence and think about that when you're thinking about Dan. Dan, welcome to State of the Nation. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me on your show. So great to be here.
We're very pleased you're able to join us. This is a big district and a big campaign you're running here. Tell us all about it.
So you are right. It is Donald Trump's home district. In fact, I live less than 5 miles from him, about 5 miles south of him. So I will be his next congressman. I ran in 2022, as you said. I got there after a bruising primary that at one point had 12 people in it. I was the winner of that. And then I went into the general election very late because our primary is at the end of August. And I went in there as a first time unknown rookie candidate and got 45% of the vote against a five term incumbent, you know, in a bad year for Republicans. So people viewed that as a surprise because going into it, everyone predicted I would get no more than 30%. So all the people who were discouraging me did a 180 and said, no, you got to go for it again. In fact, one of our favorite people in the world last year encouraged me to go again and looked me in the eye and said, next time you're going to win. And that's my favorite future constituent, Donald J. Trump. So he actually encouraged me to run and he told me I'm going to win this time.
Dan, I'm in New York 22, and I have a lot of friends in Florida 22, and I think there's a demographic shift, or two demographic shifts, actually, that are going to greatly favor you this November. The first is all the people that have moved into the district because of the tyrannical COVID policies in California, my New York, other northern states. And the second is the shift of the Black and Hispanic vote to Donald Trump. Now, it's not a majority yet, but it's a significant percentage of people that are waking up and realizing that the Democrat Party no longer, if it ever did, have their interest at heart.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Both of those factors are working in my favor. So we had a lot of Northerners come down in the last couple of years, and everyone's worry is that they would come down here and vote Democrat. But there's been a fantastic self-selection going on, and I'll tell you my theory on why it's largely Republicans. Because the mainstream liberal media has portrayed this false notion that Florida is a fascist dictatorship run by a fascist named Ron DeSantis. So what kind of liberal is going to want to move here? For the same reason I wouldn't move to California, they wouldn't want to move here. So you're right. That's who we're getting. We're getting conservatives. So in my district alone, the gap between Democrats and Republicans has moved 4% in my favor just in the last 18 months. And I attributed it to that. And you're right. The district is almost 30% made up of Black and Hispanic voters. And what we're seeing throughout the country is a significant shift of them in favor of Donald Trump. The numbers I'm seeing are pretty staggering in other parts of the country. If that translates to my district, this is looking really good for me this year.
Yeah, I think so. That's definitely going to be a factor. And, you know, many people from the Black and Hispanic voting blocks are concerned about immigration and the borders right now. I'm in Texas, and, you know, my good friend of mine has a Mexican-American wife, and she is just beside herself about the open border. She does not like it. And that's exactly the type of voter right there that, you know, the mainstream media, the mass media cartel, as her husband would say, don't want people to know exists.
Yeah. So when I ran in 2022, the number one issue with voters was economics issues, so inflation and so forth. Close number two was the border. I predicted then, and it turns out I'm right, border by far has become the biggest issue. People are quite concerned because every day we leave it open, we do permanent damage to our country, whether it's criminals or drugs or human trafficking or gangs and so forth. You know, we have to seal the border. And that's the number one thing I hear when I talk to voters. And by the way, I'm out every single day talking to voters. Already in this cycle, I've gone to the houses of thousands of voters. And last time around, I went to about 7,000 or 8,000 voters' houses. And that's the best way to really understand what's going on in a district, frankly, better than any poll can tell you.
Well, you know, I've been doing politics since 1972. I was a 10-year-old kid running my own crew, going door to door, knocking, handing out flyers. And I can attest to the power of retail politics. Every campaign I've been involved with, we've made an effort to do some, you know, good old shoe leather express and getting out and talking to the voters. And you get to change their perceptions, their misperceptions. Oh, I didn't know that. I heard in the media this. It's like, no, well, that's not the candidate's position. And you get a chance to really engage and have some great conversations and use them as a force multiplier, have them go tell 10 of their friends and really get the message out.
Absolutely. One of the things I tell every voter now is word of mouth. Please tell your friends about me. You know, just last weekend, I went door to door when it was almost 90 degrees in the neighborhood. And then, no, I wasn't wearing a sports jacket, don't worry. And And I was telling people, look how hard I'm working. I'm, by the way, I'm exact same age as you. And I said, listen, most people my age, they're out golfing and fishing. I'm still working. This is what I'm doing all day. And they really respect it. And I asked them to tell their friends about me. And they say, you're the hardest working guy we've ever seen. And it works.
Yeah, absolutely. Where are you at with election integrity? Timothy and I interview a lot of people, and we're really trying to get into the nuts and bolts of where the vulnerabilities are in our election system and what collectively, you know, as citizens and journalists and activists and American patriots, what we're seeing is so many threat vectors. You know, I'm not even going to go through the list, but it involves activist judges, activist lawyers. I said I wasn't going to do the list. Activist DAs, secretaries of states. I mean, Dominion, the cybersecurity posture on these things. It's absolutely abysmal. What are your thoughts on this? And what are you going to, you know, are you in that fight?
Absolutely, I'm in that fight. And it's something I'm very concerned about. We are sloppy in the way we run our elections. We're an international laughingstock because of it. I'm in favor of a massive rework. If you left it up to me, we'd go back to hand-counted paper ballots on one election day, which is a national holiday, get rid of early voting, voting by mail, clean up the voting rolls, and so on and so forth. And I'm all in favor of that. Unfortunately, until we fix that, we still have to play by the rules that are in place, but that's my long-term goal. Absolutely.
Yeah. It's, I mean, the secretaries of state in particular, a lot of people are really looking at that position and the way that, you know, some of the laws were tweaked and changed and some of the legislation that pushed through and gave them new powers in 2020, all in the name of, you know, the COVID scam. So, I mean, and then there's the judges too, and these DAs, it's like people are coming, like Fulton County, for example, we had Garland Favorito on yesterday from voterga.org, and they're submitting like 140 violations, and you know, the court system doesn't want to push it to the DA. So it's like, it's a big fight. I mean, this is definitely a really hard one for you know, people like yourself that want to get in there. Are you concerned about it being used against you?
Well, yeah, I mean, any Republican's always concerned about election fraud. You know, we this year, this Florida legislature and our governor, you know, made some steps, but in my opinion, far short of what they needed to fix, in particular with respect to chain of custody on mail-in ballots, because we it's our view that that's where the most amount of fraud happens. In fact, Jimmy Carter himself said mail-in ballots are a formula for fraud. And he was otherwise a terrible president, but he got that idea right. And so one change they've made in Florida this year is you have to affirmatively request a mail-in ballot. They're not automatically mailing them out. So that in and of itself is, I think, is a huge benefit. In particular, in my race, just to throw some numbers at you, when I lost to Lois Frankel, she got 56% of her votes from mail-in ballots. I got 26%. So there's going to be some attrition because people now have to request them. So that attrition is proportionally going to affect her twice as much as it affects me, for example. Now, with respect to what we're doing, my team is in constant contact working with various election integrity groups here in the county. This time around, we're going to be much better equipped than we were last time on many fronts. We're recruiting more people to be poll watchers, poll workers, but also people who are going to be observers at the supervisor of election when they count the ballots. We're also trying to recruit more lawyers to be on speed dial in case we need someone to go to a courthouse and help us with something. We're way better equipped than we were 2 years ago.
That's outstanding news, because having that ground game is the most important thing that the Republican Party can do this time around. There was just endless criticism of Ronna McDaniel's stewardship of the RNC. Things really seem to have turned on a dime now that Lara Trump and her co-chair are in charge. Have you seen firsthand any improvement or difference in how the RNC is supporting your campaign?
Truthfully, it hasn't worked its way down to my campaign from the RNC, but I could tell you our local party and our chairman and his team They've really gotten religion about getting the get out the vote effort, but also, again, recruiting people to, you know, be poll watchers and so forth. But I think things are working in our favor, not fast enough, in my opinion. I feel more can be done, in particular at the national level.
Excellent. Dan, let's talk about the thing that affects everybody. The finances, the inflation, the Bidenomics, the crushing reality of Bidenomics. What do you think about this? How do we turn this around?
So this is definitely a topic that plays to my strength. I have an MBA in finance from Wharton, same school President Trump went to, but also studied economics as an undergrad. And sorry, and I've been talking all day, so I'm losing my voice. Very bad hazard for a political candidate. And I saw the inflation coming. I mean, I did. And not because I'm a genius. The signs were all there. And there were plenty of people at the time who saw it that way as well. And sure enough, we got it. And so my answer is stop doing the dumb things that are causing it. Because look at the human suffering it's causing. Since Biden became president, over a million senior citizens have fallen below the poverty line. And that's not because they've done anything wrong. It's because of Bidenflation. But the average working class people are being badly affected by it as well. The headline number is 19% inflation, but I'd say for working class people, it's more like 30%. Now, the laptop class laughs this off. They say, no big deal. Prices go up 5%, you get a 5% wage increase. But that's not the way it works for most people. And I have the perspective of having been a teenager in the 1970s, last time we had inflation like this. The breadwinner in our household was my father, a union carpenter. Inflation like this changed our lives. It changed our standard of living. That's what's going on in tens of millions of houses now. And I know the human impact because I've been in that movie, as they say. So what's the solution? Stop the dumb things. Stop the deficit spending. And I'm a big believer in a balanced budget amendment. Number two, get back to energy independence. That's a national security thing because we don't want to be dependent on foreign countries for our oil. But on top of that, the price of energy trickles its way into everything we do. So that's the single best thing we could do. I'm also in favor of reforming the Federal Reserve. I blame them at least as much as Biden, frankly, for not taking action fast enough. But there's another thing people are forgetting about. We paid people to stay home and not work during the COVID crisis. That's still affecting us. The rate of workforce participation is still lower than it was beforehand. Small changes in that has a dramatic change and impact on wages. So we have to stop doing all these dumb things. So that's my four-part plan on how to battle inflation.
That's a very intelligent and impactful plan. Lois Frankel, quite frankly, has not distinguished herself on any issue, particularly the economics issue. And, you know, I'll give you a word of encouragement. A friend of mine just south of you down in Florida's 25th in the city of Weston, they flipped the mayor's office and three of the five city councils. They did standouts every Saturday outside the Home Depot and through rainstorms, through heat, whatever, and just to get the word out. So if it can happen in Debbie Wasserman Schultz's congressional district, it can happen anywhere in Florida, but I think particularly your district is ripe for a flip. Are people enthusiastic? The Barron turned 18, and the first word that came out is he's going to be a delegate to the Republican National Convention this summer. Are people getting excited about this election down in your district?
Absolutely. They're fired up like I've never seen it before. I've had no problem getting volunteers. My volunteer list is close to 300 people at this point, and people are really excited getting involved. And, you know, people see that I will be Donald Trump's next congressman. So that obviously, you know, is one of the things that certainly helps people get excited. But I'll tell you something that I'm seeing when I'm going door to door. The big issues are definitely, of course, like we've talked about, inflation, the border, foreign policy, Israel, Ukraine, and so on. But there's an overriding issue I'm seeing above all of that. People are desperately afraid that if we lose this next election cycle, we're going to lose our country and never get it back. So that's what's creating, I guess, in a funny way, enthusiasm. And motivation for people to get involved and do something. And I agree with them. If we lose this next election cycle, the last 4 years are just going to be a warm up. They're going to do so much damage to our country. They're going to let in 20, 30, 40 million people, whatever it takes, and completely finish the job. So it's imperative that we win this election. When I talk to voters, they see it that way too, and they're all fired up.
Yeah. That existential threat feeling is definitely palpable right now. This is going to be a big year. We hope it's a big year for you. And Dan for USA.com is the website. And also go to redeclaration.org just to, you know, remind yourself and know that Dan has signed that really cool thing. Dan, we got about a minute left, so we'll give it to you. We'll give the floor to you for final thoughts.
Sure. I want to put in a good word for the Redeclaration of Independence. When I read it, I said, oh my God, this sounds like one of my speeches, actually hitting on all the things that are important, things like the balanced budget, energy independence, secure borders, term limits, defending the Constitution. These are all things that are near and dear to me and that are motivating me to run. And people ask me, why are you doing this? I left, by the way, a very good career, an excellent job, and I'm doing this full time. That's because I see our country is in a terrible crossroads. It's time for good people to get off the couch and do something about it. I want to be able to tell my grandchildren 20 years from now, your grandpa was the guy that turned around the country and saved the country when it was in serious trouble. So Dan for USA is my website. If you're liking what you're hearing, check it out and keep donating. Thank you, everybody.
All right. Thank you, Dan. Dan Franzese, right here on State of the Nation. Again, danforusa.com and redeclaration.org. Dan, thank you so much. We'll look forward to having you back. Best of luck with the campaign. Thanks for watching State of the Nation, and stay tuned.